chance to share my story a little bit. And
thank you so much. So my husband David's going to speak after me, and when Fred asked us to speak, I said, David, what do you think? You know, we could speak together. And he said, okay, but I'm going second. So I think he might rebut a few things I say. But anyway, I'll leave that to him. So I'll tell you a little bit about my story and share what Al-Anon has done and is doing for me. So let's see. I was born in Scotland, in Glasgow, famous drinking town. And my folks on both sides are Irish. I mean, it doesn't really matter what your ethnic background, because it does affect, but we can say that certain populations are hit a little harder than others. And I know that for a while I lived in Boston, and they used to call alcoholism the Irish flu, because it's pretty prevalent and it seems to be passed from one person to the other. But anyway, we left Scotland early, and I grew up in Canada in Montreal. And so we were an immigrant family and alcoholic family. And my mother was my primary alcoholic. And so, as somebody mentioned, you know, it's like first day on the planet, or prior to that too. I'm sure she probably drank and smoked. I know she did smoke and drink through the pregnancy. And, you know, it's interesting. If I would fast forward to when I was about 16, I didn't really know it at the time, but it turned out all my friends were adult, well, 16-year-old children of alcoholic families, because even though I didn't even know probably the word alcoholic really at that time, and I certainly didn't know it applied to me or my family, to our family, it's like this gravitational pull, because you've been affected the same way and you've had to deal with the same things. And I have read that there was a period in Al-Anon, I don't know when, I think in the 80s or something, where there was World Service, there was a big debate about whether adult children could be in Al-Anon. Because really, you know, it used to be like the spouse, and it was a big debate. And I can totally understand that debate, because it's extremely hard to explain what an adult child is, like how you're affected. Because it's sort of subtle, but sort of subtle but deadly, I would say. It's a tough way to grow up. It's a very, very tough way to grow up. And I remember the first time I read some literature from Al-Anon, before I got in the program, no offense to people who've actually been in combat, but they say it's a bit like that, because it's this constant stress, and it's, it can be really debilitating, and it certainly was for me. So my mother was the alcoholic. My father was the untreated Al-Anon. I also believe in the intergenerational aspect of this disease, which I think is one of the great things about recovery, is we get to, you know, stop that cycle of you know, the alcoholism, the abuse, the obsession, all the things that come with it. So I know that my mother's father was an alcoholic. So my maternal grandfather was an alcoholic who I never knew. And so my mother was an adult child as well as being an alcoholic. And for sure my father was untreated Al-Anon, if only through my mother, but I would imagine through others in his family. The thing that was confusing in my family is my father had kind of the alcoholic personality, even though he wasn't, I don't think he was an alcoholic, I'm not 100% sure. But in the sense that, have you heard that phrase when they say that the alcoholic sucks up all the oxygen out of the room? And that was my dad, you know, everything was focused on him. He was the center of all the attention, but, and my mom was drinking and smoking and very angry. And there was a lot of abuse in an alcoholic family. I consider that I come from a violent family, many, I'm sure, have experienced that. It's common. It goes with alcoholism sometimes. For me, it was more the threat of violence. And both of my parents were working class, Scottish, Irish, whatever. And it's the physical stuff. And there was always this like threat of things erupting into a fight. They did occasionally, and I did, unfortunately, see my father beat my mother, and I had three older brothers, and I remember, I'm going to get the heavy stuff out of the way early, but I do remember being a little girl and hearing something and then going down the stairs to the basement and seeing my father hitting my mother, and my older brothers were smart enough not to leave the bed, because they knew what was going on, but I didn't. So I just went down, and so I was like a witness to that. But I think, to me, the problem with alcoholism is not so much the drinking, it's the cover-up. To me, that's the part, the secrets, the keeping of the secrets, and the distortion of reality that causes the problem. So I remember the next day saying what I'd seen and being told that's not what I saw. And, you know, it's a cliche, but my mother's like, no, I walked into the door. And it's like, well, I saw something else. And so you get that message very early. I got that message very early that other people get to tell you what you see, what you feel, you know, what you want, whatever it is. And it breaks that basic relationship that we're meant to have with ourselves, where we can trust what we see, we can trust what we feel. It's just the basics of being a person. So, and then, you know, the hypervigilance starts. Okay, what's the message that I have to, you know, that I'm allowed to say and that kind of thing. So it was very, very stressful. And the other thing that was difficult to get over the family of origin stuff, the other thing that was difficult was I had three older brothers and my parents were very old school. So, and they had four kids in 5 years. So they're like, okay, great, the kids are going to take care of themselves. They're going to raise each other, right? And I mean, first of all, it's an alcoholic family. Second of all, you got, I mean, again, no offense to the men, but I mean, three older brothers. There was no civilizing influence, you know? These guys were like, you know, it was like the law of the jungle. And, and here is the youngest and the only girl. And then on top of all, I was the favorite of my, you know, I guess you could call it narcissistic father, which made me very unpopular with my three brothers and also made me very unpopular with my mother. So it was like a very hostile environment. I guess I'll say one more thing from the feminist point of view is that, again, my family was old school and so they expected me to do all the work for the boys. I was meant to do everything, and I refused to do it, because I'm like, this is not fair, I'm not going to do this. And, well, from a very early age, I got the message that I'm selfish, I'm not a good person, because I rejected that role. So, a lot of heavy-duty stuff. But, you know, my parents have passed, and they lived till they're, you know, 85, 87. Interestingly enough, and I've noticed this in David's family too, the alcoholic outlived the Al-Anon because it's crazy stressful being an untreated Al-Anon. It's really, really tough. The anger, the rage, the isolation, you know, it's really, I mean, I don't think it's great being an alcoholic, but it's really tough being an Al-Anon. And I do believe that Al-Anonism, what we deal with, does kill. You know, I know in AA, they're like, hardcore on that. And I think it's the same with us. I think this is a disease that kills and takes away people's, you know, health and happiness, that kind of thing. So yeah, heavy duty upbringing. And then immigrant family, you know, it's one of the things about alcoholic family is the isolation. And so we kind of got the message that, okay, it's a dangerous world out there, it's safe in here. You know, you'll be safe with us. Which wasn't true. It was not true. And so, you know, there was that kind of distrust and then the keeping of the secrets, that kind of thing. But my mother was a functional alcoholic, so many people did not know that she was alcoholic. She looked good. Anyway, like many Al-Anons, my real kind of Well, when I was 16, I knew there was something wrong with my family and I wanted to leave. And I didn't know what the word was, but I wanted to leave it. And I left by the time I was 18. But like most Al-Anons, or many of us, what really kind of opened my eyes to what was really going on was getting into relationships. And I know that breakups are difficult, etc., but for an Al-Anon, it's just that whole, it's, well, for me it was devastating, and dealing with that. And so I had a kind of pattern most of my life, which was unavailable men. You know, I was kind of addicted to unavailable men, because that's the message growing up, right? It's like the people who love you the most are hurting you the most. So it's like, okay, that's what love is. It's very confusing. So I got into Al-Anon. I grew up in Montreal. I moved to Boston, so I got into Al-Anon in Boston. It was great. I remember before I got into Al-Anon, I did a one day kind of thing with a therapist about alcoholism, and she had us do something which I thought was illuminating, and which was draw your family tree. And she said, you know, put, like, let's say a square for those who are mentally ill, put, you know, let's say a triangle for those who are alcoholic, and then, you know, put a star for those who are extremely religious, you know. Again, no offense, but so, I mean, it was quite the revealing. I mean, the whole family tree was building with those three symbols. And, you know, I think some of the teetotalers, so to speak, it's just the flip side of the coin, right, of the alcoholism, and it's still not dealing with the basic issues. But so anyway, I went to Mexico City, and I met someone in Mexico City, a woman who was doing AA, and I visited her in San Francisco, and I basically said, I want what she has. And I went back, and when I got back to Boston, I went to my first Al-Anon meeting. I got a sponsor. I was so quick to jump to get a sponsor, I didn't even get the message that, you know, you're not, we don't really advise if you're heterosexual, same sex, opposite sex, but I got a male sponsor for a couple of years. It worked okay. And then, it worked well. And then I moved to San Diego, and I had a sponsor there who was, looked exactly like my grandmother, actually. She had the blue eyes and the, you know, she was great for many years, but I honestly think I wore her down. I think I wore her out with my dating. It was, you know, so at a certain point, we started working the steps, and one day, and she was sarcastic with me, and I said, like, why are you being sarcastic with me, you know, working the steps? And she said, well, it's the only way to get through to you. And I thought, oh, okay, well, this is not gonna work. You know, I can't have a sponsor who wants to be sarcastic with me. But then again, I'm not blaming her. I am a tough person to deal with. I'm sure my husband can tell a few stories. So anyway, then I got my third sponsor, who's been my sponsor for about 10 years, Teresa, and she's a quadruple winner. So she does four different programs, and just one thing, I've heard a joke, an Al-Anon joke, is they say that if you have less than three programs, you're probably in denial. So anyway, she's great, and because, you know, us Al-Anons, I love us Al-Anons, it's definitely my tribe, my family, but sometimes we're really like, don't want to hurt anybody's feelings as a sponsor, and we try to couch everything. She's very direct with me, and I really like that. And there's some really deep bonds of love. And I think sponsorship, I am sponsored. It is, to me, about working the steps for sure, and I've worked the steps with her two or three times, in order, as we say. But I really think that sponsorship is about intimacy, and having somebody really see who I really am and still love me, not reject me. And so that's very powerful. And I picked my sponsor because she had what I wanted, which was she's now married, and she had been with her wife at that time, like 25 years. And I was like, that's what I want, you know? And so she started sponsoring me, and she was there at our wedding, and I have to say she had the biggest smile of anybody at the wedding, because she knew that I wouldn't be there getting married if it wasn't for her and the love that she gave me. And I had a lot of shame. I had a lot of shame about marriage and kids, and so I didn't raise kids, and I got married later in life. But I was obsessed with marriage for 20 years, and I spent 20 years telling myself I'm not good enough because I'm not married, and obsessing with marriage. And, you know, I think at a certain point, you know, I read a quote somewhere, it's not Al-Anon, but I read a quote that said, when you look back on your life and you see the things that you didn't get, you realize that you didn't really want them, and which is interesting. And that just kind of struck me at the right time, and I was like, you know what, I didn't really want, you know, marriage and kids, I guess in my younger years, I didn't, even though I couldn't admit it to myself. Because I didn't have a good model of it, you know, I had, I didn't want that. And, but anyway, so it's funny because after we got married, like about a year later, her and her partner, who she'd been with for 25 years, they broke up, and it was for 2 years, and it was really incredible. Like, her partner had a midlife crisis or something, and it was just interesting to walk through that with my sponsor and just listen to her, you know, applying this program to that heartache and to that devastation. And she was being blamed for a lot of stuff, and she just worked the program, and they're back together, and they got married, and things are going really well. So it's like, you know, these tools do work. And I think for me, I also want to mention, I did do service, quite a bit of service for a while. I went super big on the service for a while. I don't know, and how many of you maybe done world service? It's like a very intense experience. Oh my God. Anybody doing world service right now? Like, yeah. So I was doing it in Fullerton, and that's how David and I met. And my God, we went through the whole thing with the Alateen, you know, the when you have to fill out those forms and everything. But that was a year and a half debate, like almost 2 years. And we would go to the room in Fullerton, and there'd be like 20 people lined up on one side, 20 people lined up on the other side with the mic, and people would get up there, we have to do this, we have to protect the kids, somebody else would get up there, we cannot do this, this is going to destroy Al-Anon, there's no rules. And this went on for a year and a half, and it was like, oh my God, like, let's just make a decision. But, and it's like, you know, the Al-Anon and on and on is what we do. Very true, very true. And, but you know, somebody said to me, and I was like, my husband said, you know, because that's how we got to know each other, and he said, like, I'd always come to the meetings, you know, kind of a black cloud over my head at these meetings, and one of the things they'd say is, okay, no computers, so I'd take up my computer and start typing, you know, I was like very defiant, very rebellious, you know. And, but anyway, somebody said to me something that, is so true of my Al-Anon recovery, is they said, you know, these meetings, these World Service meetings, I mean, it's just that some of these people, nobody's ever listened to us, to an Al-Anon in our lives. And, you know, like being the youngest in my family, and nobody listened to me, and nobody took anything I said seriously or gave me any credence or anything. And that went on my whole adult life. So to be in a room and to be able to say your truth, which is what we get to do every meeting. And I think one of the things that's powerful for me, there's so many powerful things about Al-Anon, but in this, I kind of lost the time thing because I don't know who has the password, but the, okay, so, but so the powerful thing for me is like that middle sponsor that I burnt out, you know, it's, I'm sure she's fine, but the thing is, it's like, it's like I had this insane need to talk. I mean, I don't have that with my sponsor now. I'm at a different stage in the recovery, but I had this like insane need to be heard. And that's what those people on both sides of the microphone, they needed to be heard. And those who were abused, or those who saw people be abused, and they needed to have their voice heard, and we do get our voice heard. And the amazing thing for me in Al-Anon is I can say basically whatever I want in the meetings, and nobody comes up to me and says to me afterwards, no, that didn't happen. You're making that up. You're the problem. And that's what happened in the alcoholic family when in my early 20s, I started to sort of speak up. And I remember my mother said, you are not part of this family anymore. Because the way you were part of the family is you towed the party line and you circled the wagons and you know, and if you didn't, you were a betrayer. And my brothers were like that. I mean, just is that need to be heard and to say what's true for me. And of course, with the sponsor, you get into the details with the program. And you know, it's just so great. I mean, what an incredible invention that we get to say our darkest, most painful things, and half the time we're laughing or we're crying or we're, you know, it's just, it's an incredible thing. And I look around this room and I think the fact that it's a men's meeting and there's so many men, it's so powerful, because I think that, I mean, we all need it, but I think that men in our society have a hard time to talk about feelings and to be loving with each other. And I had a friend who used to come to this meeting, I'm not sure if he does anymore, and he said to me, he's a double winner, and he says, oh my God, when I go to my AA meetings, it's like really rough, the guys are really sarcastic. He came to this meeting and just felt so much love, you know, because that's what we learn how to do in Al-Anon, is be loving friends to each other. And so I guess for me, maybe to wrap up, I was able to move to California. I didn't know a soul in California. That was in 2000. But I had Al-Anon recovery, so I could go to meetings 3 times a week, get to know a bunch of people, be loved. I'm also the kind of person who can have like controversial fights with friends and stuff. And like Al-Anon is a place where like the group is never going to kick me out. So that means a lot to me, because you know, I have these fights and then, you know, break off relationships, and sometimes they come back, sometimes they don't. But that never happens to me with Al-Anon. So I've been coming for 21 years, and I think that I will come my whole life, and I wouldn't have my best friend, my husband, if it wasn't for this program. And I guess the number one thing that the one that works the most for me, because I like the steps, I love the steps, but I really like the slogans because they're so short and like when I'm kind of going crazy. So I think the one that's working the best for me right now is keep the focus on myself, because it's just so easy for me to obsess with someone, like especially someone close to me, or anybody, right? And just try to show up for my own feelings, my own life. And I guess the last thought I'll leave you with is, there is another Al-Anon joke where they say that, you probably heard this one, but they say that when an Al-Anon dies, somebody else's life passes in front of them. I mean, it's like so sad, you know? It's really sad. So I think that, you know, I love all the steps. It's true though, right? It's like the obsession, you know, every detail of someone else's life. But I guess the 2 steps I could put in good word for, they're all really great. But step number 4 is to me the antidote to that. Of focusing on someone else's life. Like step 4 is I always tell my sponsees, you're the star of the movie in step 4, you know, you get to talk about who you are. And the other one that I think is super, super powerful, again, they're all really great, is step number 11. The meditation has really helped me to, I think the meditation as well as meetings have helped me to calm down. This is me calm compared to what I used to be like. I was extremely hyper and performing all the time. But at step 11, I used to go to a meeting in Boston where we meditated at the beginning of the meeting. And I've meditated every day, at least a minute, as one of my friends says, even 1 minute counts, for the last, I don't know, 20 years or so. And it's really been helpful. So with that, I will pass it to my husband. So thank you.
Hi, my name is David. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. It's nice to see you all. I find myself at a loss for words. That's not something you... You're welcome. I usually have some idea what I'm going to talk about when I stand up, and today I kind of don't. It's been an interesting and full holiday season, and I've had a series of sciatic episodes over the past 2 months, and I haven't stood up in one place for 20 minutes yet, so this will be a first. If I start to tilt, somebody just prop me back up, if you would. I said I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. I have been a member for 27 years. I came to Al-Anon as a result of a relationship with a woman whose drinking fascinated me. We were in the same line of work, and a couple people who worked with both of us for different organizations thought we'd be good together, and they set us up in every sense of the term. And so we met at a benefit party. There was a band and a bar and all of this. There was some political stuff going on in my job at that time. And I'd love to tell you that I was detached, but I was right at the heart of it. So there were these two kind of groups fired up at each other within my organization, and they were both well represented at that event, at which alcohol was also present. And I kind of explained to her what was going on, and as a result, as she had a drink after another drink after another drink after another drink, she got in a bar fight with one of the guys on the other side of the thing from me. And I remember looking at that with my jaw agape, just thinking, what a woman. I assumed she did that for me. It never occurred to me that she got drunk and got in bar fights, all on her own, without my help. So there I was. During the course of that evening and other evenings, we got to know each other, and we went to a party. I remember sitting across the room from her at this party, a small group of people who'd left the benefit, and she was the life of the party. She was laughing and smiling and, you know, big gestures, big laugh. And I remember looking across the room and thinking, she seems kind of sad. I love that. So, because that gives me something to do. It's a full-time job if I choose to let it be. And so we went about having a relationship, and that was the alcoholic relationship, and I can call it that because she does now. That was the alcoholic relationship that got me to Al-Anon. And it was not a long relationship. It was about 2 years. We did a bunch of things to try and make that relationship something it wasn't. One of them was, I mentioned, we worked for affiliated organizations, and I thought maybe it would help if I got closer. So I moved to her organization. For any of the three newcomers in the room, just if you're thinking that that's a good plan at this point, please talk to me after the meeting. Something like that. We might call that forcing solutions. I don't know. So a bunch of things happened in that relationship. I'll also mention that at that time, I was 35 when I came into program. And I had a 8-year-old son who I had been raising since his mom left when he was a couple months old. And we had moved to Huntington Beach to take that job and to be closer to her. And he was 8 years old. We were working together. what happened, the end result. I could tell you all the stories, but I don't have to because you've all lived them. The end result was I turned into more of an asshole than I had been before, which surprised some people. But I became more of an asshole. And so this thing happened where there was a guy who thought he could tell me what to do just because his job title was David's supervisor. And he came to tell me to do something, and I didn't think it was a good idea. And I explained why, in calmly and in measured pace and all of that. And he didn't agree with me and told me to do it anyway. And I thought perhaps I had not expressed myself properly. And I just needed to say it one more time or a little louder or something. It escalated, and when I stood up, he felt threatened by that. And that was on a Thursday evening. They said, David, go home. We'll talk to you tomorrow. In the morning, they fired me, Friday morning. Called me and let me know you're not coming in. And that Saturday was my son's 8th birthday. It was before I had found Al-Anon. And we were hosting a party for him at the park, and we had that party. She came to that party, and at that party, she let me know that she was breaking up with me. Also at that party was my ex-wife, the mother of my son, who came to let me know that she was going to be seeking custody. So if I'm counting it right, about 36 hours, my work, my parenthood, and my relationship were threatened or taken away. And what I can tell you is it got my attention. That may have been the only thing that could have gotten my attention to that level. My go-to, I know that I'm a smart person. Sometimes I let that convince me that I know more than I actually know. And that can be difficult for those around me. But it took something that big to break through that, for lack of a better word, arrogance. No, it's a perfect word, arrogance. And I didn't know what to do about that. And I'm not going to do the long story of this, but I did. You know, I spiraled for about 3 weeks. And here's the weird part. I have no idea how I got to Al-Anon. I don't know who said to me at any point, you know, there's this 12-step program. It's kind of like AA, but it's for the people who, you know, have been affected by somebody else's drinking. Nobody said that to me. All I know is that I was unable to sleep, unable to work, a complete mess, in anger and self-pity and rage all night, all day. And after a particularly bad weekend, the third weekend that had been going on, I woke up in the morning and I called Al-Anon, and I don't know why. I don't know, but I did. And they directed me to a meeting at 6 p.m. in Huntington Beach. There was a preteen meeting going on at that meeting. There was another meeting, another Al-Anon meeting at 8 p.m., and there was an Al-Anon meeting that was alongside that as well. So I started going, and I took my son, who had just turned 8, and he started going to the preteen meeting at the 6 o'clock meeting, and I thought it was babysitting. It's not. Al-Anon and preteen are 12-step programs for people under 21 who have been affected, for now, who've been affected by somebody else's drinking. And it has all of the same steps and traditions, all of the same work, all of the same unconditional love that Al-Anon has. So I started going to that. My son started going to the preteen meeting. There was one time, this was a rough time in my life. I was 35 years old, I thought I was smart enough to figure this out. I thought I was strong enough to tell people how to make it work, and none of that was working. And there was one time when we were, my son and I were in the car, we were driving home from something, and he had done something that I was angry about. Something to do with homework, I guess. Probably not earth-shattering, but I couldn't tell the difference. And I was going off on him. My face was getting red, I was pounding on the steering wheel, I was telling him off. He had been in Alateen, preteen at that time, maybe a couple weeks, couple months. And I paused for breath and he said, "Dad, you're hungry." "You're angry. You're lonely. And you're making me tired." And I found it was almost impossible to rage and laugh at the same time. And so this thing happened that I just began to accept that I belonged in Al-Anon. I just began to accept that for whatever reason I had been affected by alcoholism. And it was very clear very soon that it wasn't just hers. And there's this, I've heard a bunch of people talk about what it feels like to come into Al-Anon. And one of my friends, who was one of my co-sponsors for years at an Al-Anon meeting, said it was like a spaceship landed and the door came down and all her people came out to her. And that's what it feels like to me. There's another one, there's an Al-Anon that I knew in early on who I hadn't seen in quite some time. And we went to SCAC, I went to SCAC, and saw her from some distance away. This was at Redlands, and hadn't seen her in a couple months, and she came tearing across the quad at me and threw herself into my arms and gave me this big, huge Al-Anon hug. And she said, David, I got a diagnosis. I'm bipolar. And that was not actually news to me, by the way. Yeah. But it took me a minute. But then I realized she finally had a name for it. She said, "It's just so nice to know." She finally had a name for it, and that is an incalculable relief. Say, okay, I get it. All of this fear, all of this rage, all of the feeling misunderstood and misunderstanding, that comes from having grown up in a home where alcohol had a greater role than it should have, in whatever course that takes. And so I started looking at that as part of working the steps, as part of doing a fourth step, which I was not successful with for a very long time. And by the way, I'll tell you, my fourth step took 4 years. I know. It took 4 years, but there is a thing that somebody said to me when I was pretty early on, said that it was her belief that it takes a year to work each step in depth. And by that schedule, I was right on time. And in fact, if I tried to at 1 year or at 2 years, look at some of the things that I was looking at in the fourth step and look at them right sized instead of oversized, I couldn't have done it. It would have brought too much, you know, fear, recrimination, self-recrimination, blame, all of the things that go with that. And so when I got to do the fourth step, and I would I was sitting in my bed at night, and what I would do is I would write the fourth step for a little while, just longhand, write it out as I was trying to go to sleep. And I would answer a couple of questions and then I was ready to go to sleep. And that was some of the first sleep I got in Al-Anon. I was, by the way, one of those people who was so unhappy, so frustrated, so scared, and completely unable to sleep anywhere else that I would come into meetings and feel the peace and fall asleep. I never worry about somebody who's sleeping in a meeting. I also brought my kid to the Al-Anon meetings for a lot of them. And he would usually sometimes fuss a little, but mostly just take a nap in the corner. And I love when people bring their kids to meetings. I love having them in the room. It's a family disease, and it's family recovery. So I told you I was looking at my family, and one of the things that I will tell you is that because this was, you know, not a quick process, what I found I was doing in recognizing how my own father's drinking and violence had been, had affected me, how my mother's caretaking and fear had affected me, how my other family members had affected me, that I was just really looking for somebody to blame for being unhappy. And as long as I continued looking for somebody to blame for being unhappy, no surprise, I remained pretty unhappy. But when I started looking at the balance of the fourth step, the first question I had on the fourth step that I used is what was your parents' life like growing up? And I had never looked at that. I'd never thought about it or questioned it. But in fact, my parents had both told me stories about growing up that horrified me. And one of the things that I realized is how hard they had tried to not raise me like they were raised. And I'd never seen that before. And that was a gift of the fourth step. So there's a lot more to it. I'm gonna kind of wrap it up. What I will mention, I will talk about a little bit about, you know, my rebuttal to what Louise said earlier. But don't, you get a redirect. You can come back up and, so the people that I started going to program with, they talked about showing up at meetings, working the steps, being of service, getting a sponsor, those four things. Do those four things and you'll be okay. They said, we don't know which one of them works, so just do them all. And so I did that. I went to conventions. When I was maybe 2 months in the program, and people were talking to me about a sponsor, about finding a sponsor, and it was very strongly suggested at that time that men sponsor men and women sponsor women, as it is still. And so I was looking for a man, and there weren't very many. Not an awful lot of men in Al-Anon at that time, or early 90s. And there was this one guy that people kept mentioning to me. His name's Bernie. And I was at one of my meetings. They announced that there was an open planning meeting for a convention and that anybody could come. And I finally believed that I was anybody and I could go. And I showed up for a Saturday planning meeting for a convention. I had no idea what a planning meeting was. I had no idea what a convention was. But I showed up. And there was a guy named Bernie sitting at the head table. And I'm just going to tell you what I saw. This is not long in. This is October. I came in August. What I saw was there was one man in complete control of a room full of women. And I wanted what he had. And I asked him to sponsor me. He's been my sponsor for 27 years. I've probably given him cause from time to time, but in 27 years of talking me through everything, he's never said an unkind word to me. He's never said the things that were in my head about how I felt about the choices I'd made. He never said any of that. He would say occasionally something like, oh, well, that was an interesting choice. And I came to know what that meant. So I did that. I worked the steps with Bernie. He walked me through my fourth step. I went to conventions. I was of service. And finally, I took the plunge in world service, which is... So there's... I would go to these meetings. I was a DR for a while, and then I became an officer on the board. And I went to these meetings, and Let me tell you one other thing really quickly. In one of those conventions, it's important to me. One of those conventions that I talked about, there was a thing that happened that was very controversial. And it was silly, now, in my view. But it was very controversial at the time in that group. And what happened is that the convention decided to put it to the business meeting, which is held at the convention. So the committee, planning committee, had put together this idea, this proposal, and put it in front of the people, and it was hotly contested. People were very strongly divided on it. You know, 20 or 50 people on one side, 20 or 50 people on the other, talked about it, yelled about it, pled, cried, everything went on, vote was taken, the measure failed. And when that happened, the people who were on the failing side of that measure went off to the marathon meetings and talked about it, and everybody else, you know, did whatever it is they do, and then the next year it came up again. Arguments back and forth, another proposal on the table, all of that going forward. A vote is taken, the measure fails. People run off to the marathon meetings to talk about it. People are crying in hallways. It's all going on like that. And then the third year, it comes up again. And by the way, in the first year, I had been opposed to the measure. In the second year, I was kind of wondering. And in the third year, I thought it'd be okay if it passed, and it passed. And one of the things that got me was it got me a higher power. Because if the higher power for Al-Anon as a whole can take care of that convention to allow people the time to grow into a decision, then it will do the same for me. And if I trust that, that is faith. Now I'll just mention, Louise talked about religion in a little bit. Louise is Catholic. A couple of years ago, I had a motorcycle accident and I shattered both arms, and I was having surgery at St. Joe's Hospital in Burbank. And I woke up from the anesthesia completely groggy, and they were doing all the things that they do to get you out of the hospital, and they gave me the forms to sign. And I noticed that in the religion section, which I had not checked, it now said RC. Louise felt that I might get better treatment if it said Roman Catholic. But I will tell you that she now believes that I've been converted. And I'll just mention one quick thing about that. Louise is very active in her church. I'm not religious. Every once in a while, not every week, every once in a while I get to go with her while she goes and she's a lector at the church and she'll read. And I really enjoy sitting in a church that I do not belong to, listening to the homily of a person whose beliefs I don't necessarily share, but trying to find something within it that I can agree with and embrace. And if none of that works, and sometimes none of that works, what I get is about an hour to think about what's important to me. And I can lose track of what's important to me really easily when all of the other things, like where did you put my shoes, are intervening. So if I had to say that Al-Anon has done one thing, it's a better sense of priorities. And I didn't know that's what I came here for when I came here, but that's what I came here for. Thank you.
Let's thank David and Louise again.